Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. While the Biden administration and many of its closest allies continue to shield Israel with diplomatic cover, the International Criminal Court and the International Court of Justice speak for much of the world. If there is to be justice, it must be applied to all. Crosstalking Palestine, I'm joined by my guest Lionel in New York. He is a legal and media analyst. In Tehran, we have Mohamed Mirandi. He is a professor at the University of Tehran. And in Sarajevo, we cross to Saul Takahashi. He is a former deputy head of office of the UN Human Rights Agency in occupied Palestine. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Mohamed, let me go to you first here. I mean, this is not the first time that we have talked about the ICC, and usually on this program, it's in dismissive terms. I don't have much liking for the ICC because of its duplicity, how it's politicized. And then it does something like this and asks for indictments against two leading Israeli officials. Of course, they had to balance it out with having three Hamas officials. For me, it's a very mixed bag. I have mixed feelings about it. The very fact that justice is, people want to start approaching this in a more balanced way, applying the law to everyone, I suppose is a plus, but because it comes from the ICC, I just really don't know what to think about it. What do you think?
I agree. I don't think the ICC has much credibility, if any credibility at all. And nor do any of the international institutions that were created since the Second World War. They're all dominated by the West, more or less. Some are worse, some are a bit better. But this particular institution is very much under the influence of the United States, and its head is very much under the influence of the United States. But it does show something. Just like the three European countries that have recognized Palestine, it doesn't change anything, but it does show something, and that is that global public opinion and Western public opinion are putting pressure on these institutions, on these regimes, where they have to be seen as behaving differently. I'm sure that the ICC had no intention whatsoever of doing anything against the Israelis, but things have become so bad that if they don't take some slight step, then they become completely discredited in the eyes of even the most naive of people.
Yeah, Saul, it's in a way, it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't. I mean, 7 months in, they decide to do something like this, again, trying to create this false equivalency. But nonetheless, it is something that I didn't really expect when we first heard about this. It came out of Tel Aviv and not from anywhere else, not from The Hague, that's for sure. And then it's happened here. So, you know, I'm a cynic. I take victories where I can take them. I do take this as a victory. We don't even know if the ICC is going to exist very much longer, considering the reaction of the Americans and its allies. Go ahead, Saul.
Well, yeah, I mean, like you, I think, you know, of course, there's certainly an element of both-sidism in the fact that the ICC not only indicted or not only is asking for indictments for the two Israeli leaders, but also for the three leaders of Hamas. So that's something which I think is not fantastic. But, you know, that having been said, I do think, you know, this is a pretty positive step. It's an important step, and it could lead to some, you know, really positive change. Let's hope. Now, you know, we have to see. I mean, what's happening now for sure is Biden and the rest of the American administration is making phone calls, trying to strong arm the Europeans and probably my government, the Japanese, into saying that they will ignore the any kind of ICC indictment. Maybe that they're trying to pressure them to defund the ICC and, like you say, to destroy it. Let's hope it doesn't happen. I mean, you know, I spent most of my career, you know, first lobbying for the creation of the ICC and then trying to convince people that, you know, despite its faults and despite the fact that it had only indicted African leaders for the first 20 years of its existence,
Africans and Slavs, okay.
Well, afterwards, yes, for the first 20 years. And then 20 years later, of course, it was, you know, it was President Putin and the Russians in the dock. And it was very interesting. The other day, Khan was interviewed, I think it was by CNN, and he said that he had been told point blank by a certain, quote unquote, a certain Western leader. He didn't say who. Would have been interesting to say, it would have been interesting to hear whom. But that he was told point blank that, you know, the ICC is not to, it's not to indict Israel. It's for Africans and I think it was thugs like Putin. I think that was the quote that he had been told. So, you know, that very much shows the hypocrisy, the double standards. But, you know, here we are. And like you say, I mean, the evidence against Israel, the evidence of, you know, Israel committing genocide and committing these horrendous war crimes and crimes against humanity is so overwhelming that there's just no way that they could have gotten out of doing this. And let's, you know, let's see what happens.
One of the interesting things about this indictment coming out of the ICC is that there's more of a highlight on the hypocrisy of Western institutions, not really on the merits, because as Saul has just pointed out, I mean, this is overwhelming. It's trying to convince people that the sun comes out in the day and it sets at night. I mean, the evidence is so overwhelming, but watching them dance around and twist themselves into pretzels, that is the spectacle. You know, Lionel, you know, I look at Western media, mainstream media, and Israel's like treated as the 51st state. I mean, there is no difference between Israel and the United States. I find this truly bizarre. But if they want to go down that path, then Blinken and Biden and Sullivan, they're going to end up in the dock using the same logic here. I guess that's what they're afraid of, right, Lionel?
I don't know, because I'm trying to try to explain to you gentlemen what it's like to live, as I say, in the fishbowl. I am living in a parallel universe. Sometimes I have to look to see where there is evidence of change elsewhere. To wit, just a while ago, people were saying the ICC is great. They didn't know what the ICC was. They thought it was perhaps a federal commission. Somebody called it the International Caucasian Court, and they were Africans and whatever, and they got Putin, and it's great, and it makes sense. What about Netanyahu and and I love the way they never even mention the names of the Hamas and three other whatever. They don't even mention it. So all of a sudden they say, wait a minute, doesn't make any sense. Excuse me, be careful what you ask for. You said it was great. Yeah, but wait a minute. That was a runaway court. But wait a minute, but it wasn't before. The next thing that's interesting is, and you're going to laugh at me, gentlemen, so let me apologize in advance. All of a sudden, those people whose idea of I guess, news is People Magazine or whatever, Amal Clooney, George Clooney's wife, George Clooney, the high priest of the cabal, whatever you want to call the woke leftist, his wife, not only is Mr. Khan her mentor, but she researched this. Now, the left and the right, and we've talked about this, Peter, they don't know what to do. And they're also saying, why do you think this came about? Why do you think this came about? All of a sudden, what was it that changed everything? In my lifetime, I've never seen anything like this.
Me too.
And people are saying, you know, maybe these protests, which you're deriding as being stupid and ill-conceived and manufactured by children trying to regroup with some halcyon days of the 60s, maybe that did it. Maybe the world, to use the Klaus Schwab term, maybe this is the Great Reset, but nobody saw this coming.
Yeah,
so
but this,
I believe, catastrophic.
It's a reset that the establishment wasn't prepared for, that's for sure. You know, Mohammed, I mean, in looking at the indictment, again, I agree with kind of Saul, you know, it's a move in the right direction from a very flawed institution. But even looking at the long description of how this process is going to move forward, the reader doesn't get the impression that Palestine, Gaza, the West Bank is under occupation. Israel, as the occupying power, it has responsibilities. I don't see that in the text. Maybe I don't know enough about the law to pick it up. Go ahead, Mohammed.
And it's not only Gaza, it's also the West Bank. Just yesterday, 11 Palestinians were murdered in the West Bank. Two school children, one surgeon, and one teacher were among those who were killed. There's footage of the children being shot on the streets, lying down, dying. But that doesn't register anywhere, apparently. Gaza is of course, the scenes of Gaza, we can only find them online. We're not going to see them in the mainstream Western media, and Western government officials are not going to say anything about it. And there's not going to be any condemnation from any of the Western embassies in Tel Aviv. But I agree that with both of your guests, there has been a sea change. Israel is not the 51st state. I think it's sort of like the District of Columbia. But the United States...
Well, Mohammed, if that is the case, then it means it's Israeli-occupied territory. Keep going.
It is Israeli-occupied territory. But there is a sea change. And I do think that not only is it the protests across the world and governments across the global south that are looking in horror, but it is young people across the Western world and in the United States in particular. And I would stress young Jewish Americans and Jewish Europeans that putting pressure on the political system. And that, I think, is what is forcing them to make some slight moves in order to decrease the pressure.
Yeah, but it's interesting. A slight move can turn into an avalanche, and I think that's what we're seeing right now. You know, I'm not a psychologist. I know a lot of people go on TV and pretend to be one. They're also military experts, and they're also experts on Russia, et cetera, et cetera. But I get this feeling that, you know, someone like Khan is thinking about his legacy, how he is going to be remembered during these times. And I think a lot of people are beginning to realize that they're going to be judged. Maybe not now, but history will judge them harshly. Go ahead.
Well, I certainly think so. I don't know Khan's psychology, so I can't sort of, you know, speak for him. But I'm pretty sure that, you know, a lot of people are looking around and seeing that they're on the wrong side of history, and they want to get on the right side of history. Unfortunately, the U.S. President Biden doesn't seem to have done that yet. But, you know, one of the things about this whole, the whole discourse about, you know, what the ICC has done and what we're talking about Gaza, and of course Gaza, it's not just Gaza, it's also the West Bank, and West Bank also includes East Jerusalem, and all this is, you know, this is extremely important as well. But it's also important not to lose sight of the fact that Israel is an apartheid state.
Yes.
And this is not just about Netanyahu and, just a handful of Israeli politicians. No, I mean, each and every Israeli politician from at least 67, and frankly, from 48 should also be
involved. So hold that thought. I have to go to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on Palestine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaVelch. Remind you, we're discussing Palestine. Okay, let's go back to Saul. Before we went to the break, you were talking about how much further culpability there is. If you're going to be indicting the Prime Minister of Israel and the Defense Minister, these are actors that have enormous amount of power. And we all know, too, and I think this is what is so stomach-churning, is that this is a genocide that is being actively shown online. We have Israeli soldiers appraising their crimes into the camera. I mean, we all can see it, okay? I mean, the most glaring one for me was watching, they were blowing up a university. I mean, the whole building. I mean, and it was very well staged, I have to say. And he's standing there grinning. I don't understand Hebrew, but I mean, he was really happy that he was part of the destruction of something that is one of the basis of civil society in Palestine. And so, I mean, how much further this go? I mean, if you're going to bring these two guys to trial, you're going to have to bring a whole lot more. Go ahead, Saul.
Well, that's exactly my point. I mean, it's not just a handful of Israeli politicians that are, you know, problematic here. And that's, you know, the problem with the whole sort of the most extreme right-wing government in Israel narrative that we see a lot of. You know, we've got to look at also what's been happening within the borders of Israel, of the 48 Palestinian territories. And, you know, all this, the whole sort of narrative about the two-state solution, the two-state solution is the only way forward, the two-state solution is the only way that peace will ever come, the two-state solution is the only feasible, blah, blah, blah. We've heard this, you know, ad nauseum from all of our so-called leaders over and over and over. But the fact of the matter is the two-state solution, you know, is comes from this partition resolution that the UN General Assembly adopted in 1947. Now, in 1947, there were 55, maybe it was 56 member states in the United Nations. It was completely dominated by the West and its allies. So that's how we have this, you know, quote-unquote two-state solution. The only reason that we're even talking about this, and this has somehow become the default option, is because it goes back to 1947. And basically, the, you know, the Western-dominated United Nations coming to the Palestinian people and saying, look, why don't you give half of your country over to these Western colonizers? Boy, that sounds like a great idea. And we've got to look at the, you know, sheer injustice and hypocrisy of that, too, I think.
You know, Mohammed, the argument, you know, you hear all the time in my entire life, you know, Israel has the right to exist. Israel has the right to self-defense. Those are the favorite ones. Oh, and the third one is it's complicated. OK, that's kind of the Zionist propaganda that we are all fed all the time. But I mean, if you look at now, we have 143 countries in the world recognize Palestine as a state. OK, and Tony Blinken says, we don't want to do anything unilaterally. Well, 143 countries, that's not unilateral. That's kind of like the vast majority of the world. What we're getting down to is that the question should be, you know, does Israel have the right to exist? But is it desirable for it to exist as a Zionist state, mm-hmm. Mohammed?
Well, Peter, I think over the years, we've seen a lot. And things are now very different from the past. The last 7-8 months has really changed the world. I never thought I'd see the things and hear the things that I'm seeing and hearing today. The world has turned against this regime, and there's a lot of awareness about what Zionism actually means, what ethno-supremacism and apartheid is. And they can't hide this anymore. And it's really changing everything, by the way. Even now, Western media, they've, for the last 3 days since President Raisi passed away in the helicopter accident, they've been saying that Iranians are celebrating. And then online in social media, we see millions of people in the different funerals in Tehran and right now in Mashhad and elsewhere. And no one believes the West anymore. No one believes Israel anymore. No one believes the United States anymore. They've destroyed themselves. They're destroyed their credibility, their soft power. And so now people across the world are saying that the Israeli regime does not have moral legitimacy and that the only real solution is for a single state where all people have equal rights. And people, when they hear that, they say, yes, that makes sense.
Makes sense.
Yes, it makes sense. They're all human beings, equal human beings. They should all be able to live together. And they see, as you point out, that it's not just the Palestinians who are showing footage of daily slaughter and the massacres happening 24 hours a day. They're seeing the Israelis, as you pointed out, carrying out atrocities and laughing about it and enjoying what they're doing and none of them being punished and none of them. Why? Because the regime itself backs this sort of behavior. So the emperor has no clothes. And I think that that is going to have enormous consequences in the years to come.
You know, Lionel, it's well known the ironclad support the United States has for Israel, but I've always found it really mystifying and truly disappointing is that if you could put it into the American context, who today defends Jim Crow? Who defends that kind of apartheid-like system that the United States had? Hollywood goes to the bank every single year. You know, Roots. I grew up on Roots. I remember watching it as a child. Okay, I mean, why can't that kind of explanation be honestly displayed to people, saying, if you support Israel and what it's doing, then you support what they did in the South and Jim Crow?
I have a friend of mine who is who's a big movie fan. I said, you remember the movie Django? I said, yep. Yeah. I said, yep. What is that about? I said, what is that about? That's about a slave who basically comes back. And you liked that, didn't you? Two things. Thank God for an unfettered social media. Thank God for Twitter. there are some sites, I don't want to mention now, of death, of absolute, and I'm a former prosecutor. I've seen murders. I have seen it all. And the thing that I try to tell my friends or people who are the unenlightened, I said, look, I'm not trying to explain one way or the other. Just look at what's going on. Tell me what this is about. Look at the looks in the faces of these people who are going through and picking up bodies. Look at the look. They have almost like they're just the thousand-yard stare. They've been doing this for too long. The other day, there was a, quote, comedian, I'm not going to mention his name, who decides he's going to address the crazy left young people. And I've got to tell you, gentlemen, what he said, which is, to me, exemplifies the fact that people don't know what they're talking about. He said, you know, people in Gaza would find it a lot better and a lot easier to live if they could go to Tel Aviv, especially if you're gay or this or that, whatever the particular phrase was. It'd be great if they could go to Tel Aviv. And the host said, that's the idea. That's what we're talking about. So it occurred to me, we're talking about basically a rudimentary, absolute basic misunderstanding using tropes and memes and ideas 30 years ago, 40 years ago. And this is an idea of these of this new kind of a, okay, we're going to look at this again. No. The best way to expose the truth is to let this lunacy prevail and just listen to it and say, I don't have to correct anything. This is self-correcting. Just listen to this. I don't know what they're talking about. Forget talking about Zionism. Just look at this. Ask this question. Do you want this to continue? And somebody told me the other day, don't use the word genocide. I say, okay, how about massacre? Do you like that? And he said, okay, maybe. And I said, oh my God, you prefer that? We are so punctilious over specific definitions, missing the entire point that we as a species should say, this has got to stop. We'll talk about the other stuff later, but this has got to stop.
Yeah, but not, you know, Lionel, you know, the people that support the slaughter in Gaza and the assaults on the West Bank, they want us all to lose our humanity like they have lost their humanity. But I refuse to do that. I refuse to close my heart because I feel that I'm culpable if I don't talk the way I'm talking right now. So is Israel's worst enemy itself?
I guess you could say that, yeah. I mean, definitely, look, positive change is never going to come from within Israeli society. I mean, it's just not going to happen. It has to be forced upon them. And really, it's the United States and the Europeans, but more than anybody, the United States. And this really has to happen. You know, you mentioned before that Israel is turning into the 51st state. And I think somebody said it was actually the, you know, it's the District of Columbia. You know, we used to joke that Washington, D.C. was the eternal and undivided capital of Israel. And just a few days ago, I read that two Republican congressmen introduced a bill which, if it were passed, it would mean that U.S. funds would go to American citizens who had served in the Israeli military, so that they would get like equivalent benefits as American veterans who had served in the American military. This is just insane. I mean, never in the history of, I don't know, but I certainly have never heard of anything like this in the history of mankind where taxpayer funds would go to reward people who had served in a foreign army. I mean, this is complete insanity.
Makes it even worse, I agree with you. It's a form of mercenaries, but what makes it worse is that the taxpayers would be funding these same people to commit war crimes. That makes it even worse. Exactly. Keep going.
Well, exactly. And like you say, I mean, Israel is its worst enemy in a way, but it's out of control. I mean, Israeli society is completely out of control. And, you know, I lived, you know, in Palestine for 5 years, and I interacted with many Israelis, of course, and I saw how they were socialized into believing that the whole world was against them, and you know the next Holocaust is just around the corner, and they've got to give before somebody.
Yeah,
gets
but
them.
Saul, really it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. I'll give the last minute to Muhammad.
For sure.
Because of what they do, the world is turning against them. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy, Muhammad.
Yes, they are their own worst enemy because they, Hamas and Hezbollah and Ansarullah and the others and Iran with them have defeated the Israeli regime militarily. But the real defeat is the fact that the Israelis have destroyed their image in the eyes of the world by committing these atrocities. That defeat is far greater than anything else. Yeah. And people won't forget that. That's what happened during the Second World War to the Nazis and others. And the Israelis are the worst anti-Semites themselves, because they are doing all of this in the name of Judaism. And that's why the courage of these young American and European Jews is so important, because they're proving
to... And what they're saying is that they have their own self-determination, and because they have their own, they want to see others have it as well. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in New York, Sarajevo, and in Tehran. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.